Jason Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. As we do every Wednesday, we say hello to John McClain from Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, good morning. How are you?
Guys, I'm doing great. It's good to have OTAs where everybody, including the Titans and Texans, are seeing their players on the field, even though they don't do squat, except basically warm up and play patty cake. And it's all about the mental part and seeing how all the new guys are adjusting. When you have new coaches like the Titans do, it's even more interesting because everything is new for everybody.
So I need, you know, OTAs are going on here, as you alluded to. So I need your help with something because, even after a year almost, I'm still trying to figure out DeAndre Hopkins sometimes and how he ticks, you know, with the media and all that. So he was asked yesterday if people have been sleeping on Treylon Burks. And he says, quote, "How do I answer that without making a negative soundbite? Nein, that's no in German." And that was his answer. He then quote tweets that later and says the media is the only one sleeping on Treylon Burks. No one in the locker room doubted him or slept on him. We are not people. I can't speak for people. So nine, he's never been slept on to us. Thank you. Come again. And I get where he's coming from. I just feel like that now that's brought more attention on it than really it needed. When he could have just been like, hey, he's out here working hard. He's always been working hard. You know, give some answer like that. So you've been around him a long time. Where do you think some of that comes from?
Well, I didn't know he was bilingual. He's learned German since he left here when Bill O'Brien made the second worst trade in franchise history by shipping him to Arizona. And just what turned out to be a horrendous trade. And I'm not exactly sure what that quote means, but I'll tell you, based on what everybody's seen for the first 2 years, of course, there's got to be doubts about Burks because he hadn't done what he was projected to do when he was a rookie. And I'll say this, I always tell people, you can't base a guy's career on one season unless it's somebody like, what is his name, Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah.
Who's one of the worst draft choices in the history of the NFL at any time. But sometimes it's the second year, and I'll give you an example of a guy that took three. In 1987, the Oilers used one of their two first-round picks on a wide receiver from North Carolina State, Haywood Jeffries. And Haywood had a great combine. He wasn't on the radar, but he caught everything at the combine. So they took him in the first round. In the first season, there was a strike. He crossed the picket line. He made the veterans mad, and it was a washout. And then in his second season, he didn't do what a first-round pick could do, and everybody here was blasting him and writing him off. And then for some reason in the third season, whether he finally matured, got with the program, coaches understood him better, knew how to utilize him better, it helped that he had Warren Moon as his quarterback, but he became a perennial Pro Bowl selection and an All-Pro selection and one of the greatest receivers in franchise history and always a great guy. And so never really knew what took that long, because there's so many things that can go into a player finally doing a good job. And a new coaching staff a lot of times has something to do with that. And if a guy doesn't do it by 3 years, he got to go. So if Burks doesn't step up this year and play the way he was projected to play when they drafted him, then he'll be out of here. But I think in Ops' way, it's his own way of trying to show support for him. And yes, he could have said exactly what you recommend he say, Chase, but he didn't. And sometimes he marches to that different drummer. But I'll say this about DeAndre Hopkins. He is one of my favorite players to cover here, not just because he was a great receiver, because I like dealing with him.
You know, we're talking to John McClain this morning on the Chasing Big Joe show. You know, John, in the 80s and 90s, you covered football and everything. OTAs were not that vital, that important, because they weren't signing 10, 12, 15 guys for agency. Why are OTAs so important now? I mean, we're in the middle of May, and we're breaking down, you know, Hopkins running an 8-yard in route or something. Why are these so important? Is it because of camaraderie? Because of new – why is it so important, OTAs, now that they weren't – we didn't have them back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s?
Well, back then, you worked them out off. They got a little vacation, and they came and they worked out. And they had to work out in pads, and they hit. And then when they started having strikes, and that went back to the 70s, and then the 80s, and the best one that they got the most out of was 1987, which led to pre-agency in 93. And players wanted changes. They didn't want coaches beating them up all through the off season. And remember, training camp used to be, well, there used to be 6 preseason games, so training camp was 8 weeks. And as soon as they got there, there was full contact and 2-a-day practices. And they usually started getting ready physically in June, and because guys worked jobs, because they didn't make a lot of money back then. They had a lot of them had off-season jobs already preparing for post-careers. So when they started getting some power through the union, one of the things they wanted was more time off. And then when teams started to build these incredible facilities, and they built cafeterias, and they would have 3 healthy meals a day, and they had lounges for players to play video games, pool tables, ping pong tables, anything they could do to get the players to come over there in the off season and take care of themselves, and then players started figuring out, if I do this, I can play longer and make more money. And you don't have guys partying as much as they used to. You had drinking days Thursdays with offensive linemen to go to a local pub after practice and see how much beer they could drink, and didn't mind the media coming over and writing about it, broadcasting about it, putting it on TV about beers they were chugging. And I can't remember, stop me if I told y'all this story last week. I may have, about Lamar Lathan and Joe Bowden and Buddy Ryan, when Buddy came in 93 and he watched all the tape. There were certain players he wanted to get more out of. And one of them was Lamar Lathan, number one pick in 1990. So he busted him down to like fourth team outside linebacker. And to get 3 in front of him, he moved middle linebacker Joe Bowden over to third team, and Bowden and Lathan used to get in fist fights as they were lining up to see who would go ahead of the other one in the off-season program. They had a rookie nose tackle, Glenn Montgomery, from the University of Houston, who thought he had to, I think he was a 5th-round pick, thought he had to fight his way onto the team. And in the off-season program, with no pads, he would get in a fist fight with Mike Munchak, thinking that was the best way to impress the coaches. And Bruce Matthews as well. Bruce got in fights. One time, Lamar Lathan and Kevin Donnelly, a guard, they came back, and it might have been 93, and they got in fights on the field during practice. And then they got in fight one time in the weight room, started throwing dumbbells at each other. And those kind of things don't go on anymore. One time in the offensive line room, Munchak and Matthews are in there, Hall of Fame guards, and these two players, Hashim El-Mashtoub, a rookie, and Stan, I can't remember his last name, from the University of Texas, Stan Thomas. They got in a fight, and blood was everywhere. And Munchak Matthews said people just had to back away against the wall. Those kind of things used to go on, and coaches had players on just so tightly wound for making them beat each other up all the time. Fights happened everywhere, and the coaches loved it. Jerry Glanville, Buddy Ryan, you know, they were tough guys who thought that kind of stuff toughened them up. Jerry Glanville thought Mike Munchak, coming from Pennsylvania, the tough guy from Eastern Pennsylvania, where Bruce Matthews, the laid-back beach boy from Southern California, that Matthews would get tougher hanging out, being best friends with Munchak. And then he thought, uh-oh, you think Munchak's becoming a laid-back California beach boy. And so it was fun, but it was so much different than it is today, where they have rules against everything, starting with you can't have pads and you can't have contact. And that's why OTAs are so important from the mental part, especially when you have a new coaching staff installing their systems.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game on this Wednesday. Continuing our discussion with the great John McClain, HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work.
John, as always at OTAs, there are certain guys not there. Micah Parsons not there. Brandon Ayuk's not there. Some other players around the league are not at OTAs. Is that a big deal or just it's the norm this time of year?
No, it's the norm this time of year. First of all, as you guys know, the only part of the offseason program that's mandatory is the mini camp. I know, like, Texans left tackle Laramie Tunsil never shows for the off-season program except for the mini camp. He works out on his own, has businesses he's involved with, but he always shows up in great shape and plays great. And what's weird, I remember last year Sheldon Rankins, a defensive tackle, had signed with the Texans, a veteran, and he didn't show up for the off-season program. And that was weird for a guy, so I thought he might have trouble making a team. He played great. He got they given him 1 year, $9 million. He ended up getting a $4 million raise from Cincinnati. So some guys just like to do it on their own. Some guys do it because they think it's hurting the team, they think that it's helping them get more money, showing that, they should get the raise they want. But I don't think it's any big deal unless it was a rookie or a player coming off an injury. Usually, though, when you have a new staff, that's when you want your guys there because they're supposed to be learning. Now, if you want to teach a player on Zoom, you can do it. But when you have a new staff and you say you don't show up and a guy you're competing with does, and they see him through the off season and they get to know him and they like his attitude, if it's tie, then the tie is going to the guy that showed up.
Talking to John McClain from Houston. You know, I've kind of thought about, like, biggest moves of the offseason, and as I relate things to the AFC South and the team that you cover, I think the biggest move of the offseason might be a non-move, and that is the Texans hanging on to Bobby Slowick as the offensive coordinator going into C.J. Stroud's second year. Because you know how this works sometimes. The league will get tape on a guy and he has a tremendous rookie year and then maybe goes back in the sophomore year. But how important has it been to have more time with Slowick and Stroud together?
Well, Slowick wasn't ready to be head coach. I wrote that after the season. He'd been a play caller for 1 year. Yes, he'd come up under Kyle Shanahan and runs the same system, but he needed 2 years. When D'Amico Ryans had been defensive coordinator for 1 year for the 49ers, which was in 2021, and he did a great job, and he got interviews, and then he said, I need to go back, and I need another year of experience. And he did, and then he had five teams interested in him, and that's what Slowick has done. It wasn't that he turned anybody down. He got experience in interviewing, which will help him next year. I fully expect him to be gone after this season. He comes from a football family. That pedigree has served him very well, and he spent 3 years working for Pro Football Focus, which he says was invaluable. That was after Washington when he worked with Mike Shanahan. And while Kyle was gallivanting around to Cleveland and Atlanta, he worked there. And he said from watching tape every day, it helped him become a better coach. And so also their quarterback coach, Gerard Johnson, last year was his first year as a quarterback coach. And he had a couple teams interview him as offensive coordinator. So the Texans gave him both big raises. I expect Gerard Johnson to be the offensive coordinator this time last year. But as you guys know, continuity is important, especially when I wrote about this last week. All those were the things Slowick and Gerard Johnson and told C.J. Stroud. All those defensive coordinators have been working a lot in the offseason, watching tape of our offense to see how they can better defense our offense and you in particular. So he has to evolve. And the mistakes, some of the mistakes he made as a rookie, he's got to clean up. So if you have a good coach and you can keep him, especially your play caller, it's invaluable. A lot of people say, well, I want my head coach to be an offensive coach, because if you have a defensive coach like the Texans do, if the head coach who calls the – if the offensive coordinator calls the plays, does a good job, he's going to get a coaching job. But that's a good problem to have. It's amazing to me how many people the 49ers lose every year as coaches and front office people, like Rand Cawthorn being a good example, Adam Peters to Washington this year, and they just have people ready to step up to replace them. And you wonder, will their well ever run dry?
So we were talking about this yesterday, and it was stemmed from on Monday, NFL Network was showing the 2002 divisional playoff game between the Titans and the Steelers, the one where Nedney flops and they end up winning the game and all of that. But McNair's just getting pelted throughout the whole thing. But, you know, we were all used to that at that point and his toughness and all of that. And so it kind of stemmed a question of when was that moment where we kind of knew, like, okay, this is the dude. This is the guy that is just going to change the franchise, and we know what he ended up doing. Was there a singular moment for you last year watching Stroud that you kind of knew that, hey, this kid's got it and he's going to be the dude here for years to come?
Well, I knew he would be the dude for years to come, but I never had any idea he's going to be as good as he was as a rookie. We didn't see anything in off-season program. Wasn't that he was bad. It's just D'Amico Ryans kept playing it down. Davis Mills was the starter, and we knew Stroud was going to be the starter for the first game. But Ryans wouldn't admit it until, like, right before the season. And he didn't do anything to stand out in the preseason. And they didn't play a lot of veterans. He's playing with a lot of new players because the new staff had to figure him out. And they lose their first game. And at Baltimore, didn't see anything. And in the second game, they lost here to Indianapolis. And he threw for 190 yards in the fourth quarter when they were playing catch-up. But we're saying, okay, the Colts are playing loose coverage. You know, anybody could do that. And in the third game, they went to Jacksonville, won 37-17. And all of a sudden, he threw some deep balls to Tank Dell, and he got out of trouble a couple of times. And that's where I started to see it. And then the next game, they beat Pittsburgh here, worse than any team in Houston had beaten Pittsburgh since the 91 Oilers. And at that point, I said, that guy's a dude who's got a chance to be really good this year. And one of the things that amazed me from watching Stroud was his accuracy. Throws that he would make 20 yards at the sideline, throw on time. That, his decision-making, were the two things that really stood out. I didn't see that with Steve McNair here because he was not the regular starter. Because they signed Steve to a 7-year contract, they said, well, we're going to sign Chris Chandler and we're going to play him till Steve is ready. And the veterans wanted McNair. They wanted to see Steve in there. They used to complain to me off the record, and I could write it, that they wanted McNair over Chandler, but he didn't get that opportunity, of course, till they got to Nashville.
Talking to John McClain on the Chasing Big Joe Show. And John, I got to ask you this. I mean, the comments from Harrison Butker, what he said at the commencement speech and all that, and not necessarily an opinion, but the way everyone reacted, including the NFL, I thought was, man, this is something different that we've seen now. And my question is, does this stop other players from speaking out? They'll see something like, oh, I don't, or maybe volunteering or doing something? Because I think the tentacles of this, John, are far-reaching.
Well, I think the fact that it's a kicker, it's like, I think it was Mike Florio said, he's a kicker, who cares? Well, fact is, he did it at a college that has more women than men, and I think some of the things that made people mad was he talking about women wanting to be homemakers and have kids, and, you know, that's kind of like the 1950s and 60s, and and there was a lot of interpretations that people had. And it's not like the Chiefs don't have enough off the field issues. It's a good thing that they're winning Super Bowls, because letting a guy like Rashee Rice, who we have on video, what he did, could have killed people, getting sued, letting him come out there and go through everything like nothing's wrong, I think they should have set him aside and not let him participate in that. It's a terrible look. It's like they don't care. Of course they don't care. Nobody cares what guys do off the field as long as they can play. And if they can play, they're going to play. The league has to sideline them. They don't want to make those tough choices. So they got enough issues as it is, and I'm sure they're tired of being asked about it. And Buckner's going to get asked about it a lot too, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to want to talk about it.
Yeah, I know that. And that's the thing, is that, you know, he said it, he was invited, and he do all that. I just think, you know, if some athletes want to go out and speak something and volunteer, like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't go help this certain organization because the blowback I might get from that. I just think there's more that's going to come down the road because of this. And in the end, John, really nobody wins.
Joe, it depends on what you say. There's a lot of people who go out and help people and say the right things. He said what he believes, and a lot of people disagree with what he said about Jewish people. He had something he had was just totally wrong factually. And that was another thing, misinformation. So I think players will be very careful about what they say. Players speak out all the time, but something like that caught people off guard because it was so well thought out and it showed what he's all about. And obviously his wife agrees with him. And so it was certainly unusual. But I think people still are going to say a lot of stuff. Some, and he's not stupid. You know, his was well planned out. Most stuff that gets players in trouble is what they put online because they're very stupid about what they put.
And then they delete it.
You know, and then when they delete it, shows what morons they can be.
Right.
And we're going to get more and more of that because of social media.
Yeah, 100%. John, appreciate it as always. Enjoy these chats. We'll do it again next week.
Jason Joe, thank you very much. I always appreciate you having me on.
For sure. John McClain joining us here on the program, and you can find his work at HoustonTexans.com.
We got to revisit our question. I think we got a winner.
Okay.
The question is, the cicada of the sports world, the most annoying, you don't hate him, just the most annoying person, whatever, fan base, coach, the cicada of the sports world that drives you crazy, you just wish would go away. We got a winner.
We will do that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.